4:21, and read that.
Being fully persuaded that God had power to do what he had promised.
This is strong faith. Being fully persuaded that God had power to do what he promised. Again, the story is about who? And it's whose story? And what are you believing? You believe in his story and that he's good for it. Here's saving faith. You got to know God's story. You got to know God's categories. And then you got to know God's good for it. How are you going to know the mind of God? And how are you going to know God's good for it? It's in his word. It's revealed. Except Abraham, you know, he didn't have the Torah.
No, he didn't have anything.
He just had God.
How do you like that? Just had God talking to him.
Yeah, that's all.
Well,
I mean, you know.
We got used to it. Remember, God was in the temple. Hey, the cloud up there, you know. Oh, you know, you want us to go fight the Canaanites again? Nah, not today. You got a ham sandwich? I mean,
that's why I called him.
No, ham was okay.
Ham was okay then.
Yeah, that's when he called
him. Yeah, ham's beer.
Ham and eggs was fine.
So what's the situation here? God has given us the story, and Abraham's believing. Now let's go back to the exile strand. Go to Genesis, read 4:12 in Romans. Because I want to be dealing with the fact that God said, I'm the one that brought you out of Ur. And then he's saying to Israel, fear not. Same thing he told Abraham. And then, I'm the one that's going to bring you out of Ur. I mean, both these guys are coming out.
Through a lot more.
But the corporate's just a spin-off of what Abraham was believing God for. It's just part of the story that Abraham knew. It's a repeat. And gee, but the guys had already, like, lived it. Abraham wrote it down. Abraham. And now Isaiah come along. The prophet's saying, hey, man, we've been there before.
So are we saying that the corporate is now more responsible than Abraham was?
They're not more responsible. They're despondent. They're in exile. They're acting like we, and we're idiots.
But they are. They're in exile because they were more responsible.
You always keep cutting yourself off from your people. Why you do that to me? You're the worst guy. What are you, not Jewish today?
I don't want to relate on that one.
He doesn't want to be a Jew today. Things are not being to him. He wants to be out. He doesn't want to be Jewish. Okay, you want to trade it?
You want to trade Jewish? Next Seder,
we're going to have a big booth, and we're going to have the evil son, and we're going to have the guys that say they. And we're going to have you in there reading the question, the second question. What mean you by this?
That's right.
Well, why do you do this?
God forbid when they come for me, I won't tell them about you.
They won't believe you. Okay, so go back to 4:12.
And at the same time, be the father of every circumcised person who not... Wait a second here.
Romans 4:12.
Who not only has had a brit milah, but also follows in the footsteps of the trust which Abraham Avinu had when he was still uncircumcised.
Now see, when we read, and we're halting... It's important to reread it until we get rhythm. So I'm going to ask for the rereading. And then same thing in the Hebrew. You read it 5, 10, 15 times until you get the rhythm. If I can't say Yachshvecha, then I'm going to say Yachshvecha until I even get Yachshvecha. And then I've got Yachshvecha. And then I'll read it that way. But if I don't, and then...
Still.
Yeah, well, because...
16.
Well, just show it to me in writing and I'll show you what it looks like. I'll read it. Yachshvecha. Yachashveha. It's here.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yachashveha.
Yes. No, but see, you're putting patach on there. And
there
you don't
is
have
a patach.
No.
Under the hay.
Is it?
I look closely.
No. But under the chet, they don't even. It's not half patach. V'yach shveha. V'yach shveha. V'yach shveha. See, Avi, you know, she's not putting it in terms of the pointing. Okay. I wish they put a half patach under the chet in order to do that.
Yeah, you can.
Because that's why I'm going to chshve, you know. V'yach shveha. I'm not going to v'yach shveha.
No, yachshveha.
Yachshveha.
Not ha.
The ha
in the end. Yeah, I know that, but ha. I'm not, yeah,
no,
okay.
No, because yachshveha.
Believe her.
No,
and
you.
It's tzedeka.
No, yachshveha is believe you. And yachshveha, believe her.
Right, tzedeka. It's
right.
Righteousness.
Right.
We know this. So I'm not pronouncing it, but I know the grammar. What can I say? So back to 4:12.
And at the same time, be the father of every circumcised person who not only has had a Brit Milah, but also follows in the footsteps of the trust which Avram Avinu had when he was still uncircumcised.
So what's a Brit Milah?
Circumcision.
No.
It's a the Moel, the son of the covenant?
It's a bris.
So a Brit Milah.
It's a covenant of the word.
Covenant of
the word.
It's
not,
okay.
Moel, Mila.
Oh, right, okay.
Covenant of the word.
Right.
It's good.
Okay.
Wait a minute. Oh. Mila means
word.
Milon. Like
what
we got over here.
Mean?
Look,
huh?
look at those words.
Mean?
It says Milon.
Varim? Things.
Devil. Devar. What is Devar?
Thing.
What is word for that? What is Devar?
It can be word, but it's not. This is a different word. This is like dictionary, Milon. Yeah.
See, behind Jeff there, you got Milon.
So we're keeping your word and the circumcision wind up coming together because God gave Abraham the direction and he did it. But then go ahead with the second part now.
After Brit Mila.
Yeah.
Mila.
But also follows in the footsteps of the trust which Avram Avinu, that's Abraham our father, had when he was still uncircumcised.
Now followed in the footsteps.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's a Greek word. Maybe we'll give you that one to memorize. Sticheo. Say sticheo.
Sticheo.
To walk. It's a well-known military term. To march in file. Ichnos is footsteps or rank, file, track. So what's happening is you're walking in a, it's like, forward, march, boom, you take off. Now who's walking in the footsteps?
We
are.
Well, yeah.
We're following in his footsteps.
Right.
So he does this journey. And what we're going to find out is they're going to send people back into their homeland to get Rivka. She's going to do the same journey. They're going to go back and get Rachel and Leah. She's going to do the same journey. And then the people in Babylon, we're all going to do the same journey. And by that time, Israel, as a servant, is going to be like having this individual corporate doing the same journey. Cross Ur, cross the Fertile Crescent. Over the Haran, which means crossroads. It's crossroads for commerce, but it's also crossroads of faith. Are you going to cross the Euphrates and go down into this promised land where things only happen according to God's story in his time? And it's out of your control.
Wasn't that gave the land from the Euphrates to...
Yeah.
To
everywhere
the
you want.
Yeah, but you fill it in backward. You go to Canaan and live there. You knock off the Canaanites, and then you be fruitful and multiply, and like you did in Goshen, where you spill over the borders, in Canaan. And the Arabs know this too, so they say, those guys, that Torah, they're out to get us, even though, you know, we're few and far in number because we're so disloyal to the covenant. But they're worried that someday we're going to do that to them.
So
they see the covenant, they see the Torah as jihad on them.
Well, are they more loyal because they're so plentiful? Is that what we're saying?
Yeah, we'll get into that later.
Loyalty.
They got 284 million people, and they want Jerusalem. And they're organized under Islam to get it, because they despise the birthright, but it's later. We haven't got there. So back to here, 417, 421.
Which one do you want, 421?
I went 412 first again.
412.
He's getting good at reading this, it's great.
Huh?
and at the same time be the father of every circumcised person who had not only had a Brit Milah, but also follows in the footsteps of the trust which Avraham Avinu had when he was still uncircumcised. This accords with the Tanakh, where it says, I have appointed you to be a father to many nations. Avraham is our father in God's sight because he trusted God as the one who gives life to the dead and calls non-existent things into existence. 21.
That's deep.
For he was fully convinced that what God had promised, he could also accomplish.
Now, you're getting back to where on 21 it's starting to make sense, right? Because you're getting a feeling of what saving faith is about. What is saving faith about?
Trust.
Trust what, though?
Trusting God.
Trusting God that what?
I'm going to be part of the Milky Way.
What he promised, he's got the power to accomplish. Now, when he's the father of the circumcision, verse 12, and the uncircumcision, verse 12, circumcision are dealing with saving faith of Abraham, and they're coming into this place from Abraham's part of the story. Now, did Abraham have saving faith or not?
Yes.
Abraham has saving faith. And Abraham, it's accounted to him for righteousness, tzedakah, in 15:6, which is before he has Isaac, which is before he knows anything about trusting God to receive Isaac back from the dead. Because he hasn't even had Isaac from the life yet. He doesn't have him to give him away yet. He's circumcised waiting for him right now when we're in this portion reading.
Preparing the camp, no?
So the father of the circumcision, but also of those that walk in the steps of the uncircumcision. Verse 12. Now, do you see the steps of the uncircumcision? Where are they? They're walking the journey of who?
Abraham.
When his name was?
Abraham.
Avram. And the spiritual journey is a dynamic where they're walking from?
Aram.
Exile. To
but isn't
the land.
But isn't the uncircumcised or the Gentiles?
Well, yes, but it's... See, I'm getting it, why Paul could let the Gentiles in without demanding that they be circumcised. When we're reading the chapter here, and if you're reading it from a Jewish perspective, Abraham not only has an international household, but in this chapter, they're not having Abraham's son of the promise, and yet the whole household is being circumcised, including Ishmael, including the Gentiles, including the purchased slaves, anybody in the house. So if you're in the house, get circumcised. But they're in the land. So they're in the house, in the land. And whose house is it?
God's.
See? It was Abram's house, but then it becomes Abraham's house, it becomes God's house. And when it's God's house, then he's saying, because Abraham just said whose house it was. Whose house did he say it was?
Eliezer.
Yeah.
Damascus.
You know, the son of the house. The son of the house is a Canaanite house. And God's going to do a turn here where he's going to twist Canaan into Israel. He's going to turn the world upside down. He's going to have a billion Gentiles out there that believe in the God Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And the Jews are going to still be sitting around back in, you know, pre-Jesus day saying, you know, what's God doing? He hasn't done a thing in 2,000 years. You know, nothing. Because all these, you know, Gentiles, they believe in an idolater Jesus, you know? They're idolaters. And the Messianic Jews are the worst idolaters. They're leading everybody to be that way.
So you think Paul's equating the Yeshua's, you know, death as the covenant, cutting the covenant, in the same light as the Lord cutting the covenant with Abe? Or what? I mean, is he going there? He hadn't ever said it, but he's intimating it.
Well,
because the Gentiles don't know from this other covenants. They don't know anything, you know?
We're going to have to get to Vayera.
They only know that there's a man named Yeshua.
Right, we have to get to Vayera on that. But the answer is 424 and 425. So let's read 424 and 425, which is the same on what we picked for the portion.
They're written also for us, who will certainly have our account accredited to, because we have trusted in him who raised Yeshua, our Lord, from the dead. Yeshua, who was delivered over to death because of our offenses and raised to life in order to make us righteous.
So read the whole thing again.
From
24 and 25. 24 at the end.
And they are written also for us, who will certainly have our account credited to, because we have trusted in him who raised Yeshua, our Lord, from the dead. Yeshua, who has delivered over to death because of our offenses and raised to life in order to make us righteous.
Saving faith for the Gentiles, okay, is that not only Isaac came back from the dead, but Jesus came back from the dead. For the Gentiles, Isaac was sacrificed, not bound on the altar. For the Gentiles, that was Abraham saving faith, that he sacrificed Isaac. And you ask a Gentile, what happened at the Akedah? And they won't say the binding. In fact, they'll say, that's a strange idea. Instead, they'll say, you have an incoming call. This is from heaven.
It's God.
Lech lecha. She goes, no, lech la. Now, I want to read Romans. If I would have started this, if I'd been writing Walk Genesis right now, I would have started on 3:30, and I'd have gotten 3:30 and 3:31 in. So somebody read 3:30 and 3:31. But we're gonna stop at 3:30. Yeah, this is Romans 3, verse 30. And it addresses some of what David has raised. It also gives a broader context for 4:24 and 4:25.
Since there is only one God who will justify the circumcised by faith and the uncircumcised through that same faith.
There's only one God that will justify the circumcised what?
By faith.
And that by faith is ek. Ek pistis. Ek pistis is out from. Ek out from is like a source. I'm taking it out of here. So if I've got a bushel of apples, I'm taking it out of here. What do I got?
One less.
I got an apple.
Right.
What if I take this out of a keg of fruit?
Got a fruit.
I got fruit. Okay. What if I take diamonds? Take this out of here.
Diamonds.
Okay. Ek pistis. Ek pistis is out from in the source. It's taken from the source. So we're talking about Abraham being the source. And the circumcised are going to be justified from the saving faith of Abraham, out of the saving faith of Abraham. And the Gentiles are going to be
through,
and it's the
faith.
Right, the atis pistis. The word tis is article. And when there's an article, it refers back to the very same what the previous use was. So if it's ek pistis, then the atis pistis, tis pistis, refers back to ek pistis. And it's built on it. So it's through that very same faith. Now get this. The Gentiles are saved by the faith of the Jews in Abraham?
Mm-hmm. Well, technically, it's not really that. Technically, it's cut from the covenant of Yeshua that they're looking at. Really, that's really where it's at.
Isn't it the covenant of the word of, that God gave to Abraham?
Yes.
Yeah. But
and who believed it?
It's fulfilled.
And Abraham believed it, and it was reckoned to him as righteousness. And that's the kind of belief that Israel is going to get from their father Abraham, and that the Gentiles are going to get from their father Abraham. Now, this is important. Because remember, we already got a transcendent kingdom of light. And now what we're dealing with is words that go beyond. And she's right with Brit Milah. It's words that go beyond form. Jewish, Gentile, you're a will. And what? You believe God for his word. And you believe God can do what he says with his word. And you're a will inside this body. That doesn't matter if it's Jew or Gentile, because it's the same belief in. Not the same belief, the same belief in. Belief in God. That is the power, like Ken said, and he's good for it. He can do it, and he will do it. I believe it. This saving faith. He will do and can do and is good for what? Creating life ex nihilo, as well as bringing life back from the dead. Both! And the Gentiles then are focusing on bringing life back from the dead, and they're coming later in the journey in terms of the faith, because when we're looking, it's accounted unto Abraham, ek pistis, righteousness, when he just believes God's good for making Isaac out of his loins. He doesn't even know it's coming out of Sarah's loins yet. That's going to be a big mystery and a surprise in 17 verse 6. 16. So you go to 17, 16. We'll read that. 17. Genesis 17, 16. Meanwhile, we're going to still be playing around in Romans here. Somebody else, I want to get Romans 8. I want 29 and 30. And then let's see. I'm going to wind down here. When should I end? 10, 15 minutes?
15.
Okay. Okay, good. I want Romans 8, 29 and 30.
For those God foreknew, he also predestined to be conformed to the likeness of his Son, that he might be the firstborn among many brothers. And those he predestined, he also...
Wait, that's enough. That's 29 first. Those who he foreknew, he predestined.
Fight off more than that.
Did he foreknow Isaac?
Yes.
Yeah.
Does he tell Abraham Isaac is going to be born out of his loins?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. He doesn't. Well,
and then he doesn't tell Sarah until later.
He even gives him the name.
In next verse, the Vayera, when he shows up. Mm-hmm. But in right now, all we know is Abraham knows it's coming from his loins. But Sarah does too. Here, give me Genesis 17, 16. But this is after, 15, when he's given all this land and he has a belief in faith, and then 16, when what's happening? Ishmael coming and going. And that's Sarah's idea, and it's the apple all over again. The wife gets a brilliant idea, and the husband says, I'm an idiot, let me go along with it.
Yeah, exactly right.
The women get the brilliant ideas, and the men, they're so super spiritual, they go right for it, the bait, every time. Men are idiots. The men are in charge. The women get the brilliant ideas, and they go, oh, what a great idea, let me try that. Does that taste good?
It's like the man has no patience.
You think I should have a kid for you? Okay, what? In vitro fertilization through Hagar? Okay, you sure, great idea. Oh, how's that? You don't like her, you want her kicked out? Oh, no. I can't believe it. Next thing, I got 284 million Arabs wanting Jerusalem, right? All right. Bad idea. Okay.
Like
Genesis 17, 16. Yeah.
Bless her, world over, I will give you a son by her.
I give you a son by her. Yeah, go ahead.
Truly I will bless her. She will be a mother of nations. Kings of peoples will come from her.
Kings! And you know this is going to be... All these guys, Nahor, Ishmael, they're all going to have dynasties. We're going to be watching them coming and going in Torah. Some guys knock them off right away and generals take over and they knock them off every two generations. Other guys, they go a little longer. Israel's supposed to be going unbroken from the line of David. They can't get it set up for a while. Then they get it set up. They got the wrong guy. Then they knock him out. Then they get David in there. Then they're going for a while. They get a curse on that guy. All kinds of stuff happen. But you got this line going, and it's supposed to be from Abraham's loins through David to Yeshua. And we're working on this, see? And God is going to be Chesed Ve'emet. Through covenant kindness and truth, he's going to establish line of David, and he's going to give this king, the King of Kings, nations, and bring the whole thing together in Yeshua. And they're playing for it right here, right now. Sarah knows it, because Abraham knows it. Because he knows I'm an exalted father before I even have a nation, and now I'm a father of many nations, and I saw the Milky Way, and I believed it. And it was put on my account for righteous merit. God knows the heart, and he gave me A+.
But in 17, he doesn't believe.
Well, Sarah is having a little hard time.
For a couple of minutes.
Well, Sarah, she's having a hard time. 17, 16. Although I will say the tradition says Sarah was the real guy grounded in faith, and Abraham was no good. But when I read Torah, it looks the other way to me. She didn't like him picking on her. 17, 16.
Okay. And I will bless her.
Because she said, I didn't laugh.
Moreover, I will give you a son by her. Truly I will bless her. She will be a mother of nations.
She gets a name change.
Mm-hmm. Before, it's in 15.
In 15, just before he says it, he gives her a name change. He gives Abraham a name change. Now Sarah's getting her name change. It's all in this portion, Lech Lecha. We're dealing with saving faith, and the two are becoming one. Sarah's getting a new name, Sarah. What is it? 17, 15.
Sarah
God said to Abram.
No, Sarai is my princess.
Right.
Sarai is what?
Princess. God's princess.
Princess of God. Oh. Hey.
Hey is hey. Adonai.
Which means she's going to be the princess of God's story now. Get the change? Yep. Little change there. Big change in destiny. Abraham's no longer an exalted father with a princess. He's now father of many nations with the princess of Yod-Heh.
That's 17.5.
Yeah, 17.5. And then he quotes it from Septuagint. I start going a little crazy on that. I won't get on that. So 15 and 16. Again, just for review.
God said to Abram, as for Sarai, your wife, you are not to call her Sarai. Her name will be Sarah. I will bless her. Moreover, I will give you a son by her. Truly I will bless her. She will be a mother of nations. Kings of peoples will come from her.
So, faithful with nations and kings and a land. And it's going to be from her loins, too. He never had it so good. Okay, well, he never had it so good. Get circumcised. See, the good news always comes with the next news. If it's bad, you're going to get exalted. If it's good, you're going to get hammered. Get ready all the time. Why? God's stretching you. He wants you to grow. So he's going to put the carrot out, and then, you know, you're going to bite the carrot. Then your faith is going to be expanded. Why? Because he's making you into something different. What's he making you into?
His story.
Something that fits into his story.
Right.
And what are you starting with? Something that wants the things that fit into your story. So you got this change that's playing out. Now, Romans 8, we read 29, which was basically those he foreknew, and now we're talking Isaac as well as Yeshua, as well as the line of kings in between. Those we foreknew, he predestined. And then verse 30.
And those he predestined, he also called.
Called?
Those he called, he also justified.
Justified.
And those he justified, he also glorified.
Glorified. Get it? We're tying in now to Noah and what we just talked about before. Sanctification and what the fruits of sanctification are. What is that? What's that all about?
And he's telling all this to the Syrian, right?
Remember, grace is mercy in action. All right? What did we say last week under Noah? Rest, radiate, elevate. Noah rests, radiate God's holiness. He transforms creation and then elevates. Noah inherits the whole world and becomes the father of us all. He set over his father's creation. And we were told, be vigilant. Why are we supposed to be vigilant? Because in the end of days, in the days of Noah?
They left. They didn't.
They don't believe.
If you're not ethically ready, you're not ready at all.
They thought Noah's nuts.
If the demons know when Yeshua's coming back, what good will it do them? Mm-hmm. If you're into eschatology, meaning your idea, like if I know when, I'll clean my act up. You're going to spend exactly 2 minutes cleaning your act up. And if he comes 2 minutes early and he says he will, he's going to catch you with your pants down. He comes as a thief in the night. When he comes as a thief in the night in a temple, what does that mean? Come on, baby, light my fire. The guy's wearing a linen with the tolat sheni. And the high priest comes in and says, snoozing at 2 a.m. You're supposed to be 10 in the light. You're light to the nation. You're supposed to be 10 in the light all night. Here's the light. Funk. And the guy's sitting there going, I had a dream. And in the dream, I could smell linen burning.
Hey, man.
And it was fresh.
And it was me.
Smoke coming out of my pants! High priest came as a thief in the night. And you're going to come as a thief in the night. And so be vigilant, lest you be caught off guard. And if you're sleeping, if you're not ethically sanctified doing the work you're given, including this dull, mundane task of tending the fire, like abiding in the light day and night as a priest, tend the fire all night. And what we're talking about is abiding in the light. But if you're not doing that, you're not moving into sanctification, then guess what happens? Redemption? You're caught. So the grace is mercy in action, and it's going to lead to redemption, sanctification, and glorification. That was last week. And we cited Colossians 1, 12, and 13 for redemption. You're transferred to the kingdom of light. Sanctification, we dealt with Colossians 3, 12 and through 15. Matthew 5, 5, the meek will inherit the earth. And what are these virtues of light? They're not practical, but what do they have to do with abiding in the light? Whole different ethic that deals with spiritual behaviors in a spiritual dynamic that deals with living in God's house and not being in a bite and devour mentality. So you're not eating blood. You're not eating blood eaters. You're humble. You're meek. And the people that are humble and meek are the guys that get elevated, get lifted up, because God the Father will come do this. But we've said it's not practical in this world, but it has to do with sanctification, ready to be living in God's house when He comes to establish it. And you got to be vigilant because you don't know when it's going to be. It's imminent. For you, it could be the day you die today. For you, it could be tomorrow. For you, it could be that He'll come and catch everybody off guard today. You don't know when it's going to be. No one knows. The Son doesn't even know. So the Father will send Him. So the omniscient Son was walking around here saying, no one knows that day, not even the Son, but only the Father. And so eschatology, we were told, be vigilant. But be vigilant means tend the fire and don't get caught as a thief in the night. Sanctification, and then Matthew 5, 8, glorification. So there's movement in sanctification. Because when you're dwelling in the light, what's going to happen? What happens when you're dwelling in the light? You're transformed into the light. You get the darkness out. It's just a matter of time until the glory of God radiates to cover heaven and earth. And you're in the middle of it because you are dwelling in the right place at the right time. You were in the light. So being vigilant is being ready. Being ready is being walking in the light and abiding in the light. And if you're abiding in the light, you'll be in the right place at the right time. You have to be. Why? Because you're already present with God in the Spirit now. Sanctification. So we get away from Noah again. We get back here to the idea. Those who He foreknew, He predestined, Romans 8:30. And the people that He predestined, He called. Many are called, few are chosen. He called you. He knows who you are. He knows what your potential is. He knows how you fit into His plan. He has a plan. And what happens when you're called? Well, if you believe this story, you're justified. And when you're justified, it's just a matter of time until you're glorified. That's going to happen to you, whether you like it or not. It's part of walking this path of fitting into God's story. He's told you already. And if you think, well, everybody but me will be glorified, then I'm sorry, it's the wrong story. That's your idea. God's story is His sons will be brought to the light of glory and He will glorify His own. That's His story. And if you're in it, tough. You're going to be glorified no matter how low your self-esteem is. You worm.
That's about right.
So, back to Romans 3:31 now. I want to show you Paul's wordplay. I walked around for at least 15, 20 years going, do we then nullify law through faith? May it be. On the contrary, we establish the law. I go, well, that's great that they established the law. How do they do that?
They is weak.
How does that do that?
They is weak.
We establish the law. It is. He's stoman. We establish. It's Greek. He's stoman. We establish the law. But how do we establish the law? Do we nullify the law through faith? May it never be. Allah. Somebody read 331.
Does it follow that we abolish Torah by distrusting? Heaven forbid. On the contrary, we conform to Torah.
And it says, on the contrary, we conform to Torah. You know, every translation that we read here is going to sound something like this. Let's hear them. I'm going to throw a rock at every one of them. So look out, I'm nuts.
Do you want to tell you what translation it is? Or?
Yeah, well, it doesn't matter. Because I can't find the translation that will...
Okay, New American Standard says, what then shall we say to these things? If God is for us, who is against us?
No, 331.
Oh, I'm on the wrong one. Oh, sorry. Yeah. That was 831.
Yeah. Yes, you got it.
That was it.
That was. Okay, how about 331? What then do we nullify the law through faith? May it never be. On the contrary, we establish the law.
And see, notice, through faith. But we really know it is through the same faith. And Stern even said through the same faith, because he picks up on the tis in the pistis, through the same faith. But that's what happens here, is that the way this ends, 331, it says, Allah nomon histomen. Histomen. Allah is but. You can go on the contrary or something, but it really is but. And then nomon doesn't have an article. If it had an article, then it would be the same Torah. The problem is, when it doesn't have an article, then just like the other thing was saying on the same faith, by not having an article, the anaphora, the use of this in the Greek, it doesn't mean the Torah. It means it's a different use of the word.
Does it mean it's universal?
No, it means it's a quality of the thing. A quality. So what it's really saying is, on the contrary, or but, we establish a principle. So it's saying, do we establish, see, because of the Torah.
A new one or a one out of Torah?
No, see, what is the Torah? The Torah is fundamental instruction from God. What is the quality or the nature of the whole Torah? What's the quality or the nature of the whole? The answer is a principle. So it isn't a particular law. It isn't the set of laws. That's the Mosaic ordinance. That would require ton nomon, to say the same law. Just like tis pistis would be the same faith. We're justified by our faith in the Gentiles by the same faith. Well, we've had nomon already used. So here, he's not using... it's very easy in the Greek to do it. It's just that he's got to say Allah ton nomon. He's got to have the article. When he doesn't, he's saying, but what we do here, the idea here is, you know, if you Gentiles aren't going to be keeping the Mosaic ordinance, and you know the Torah in this life isn't going to be forced on the Gentiles, and let me tell you something. They're all coming into the house of Abraham. They're coming in uncircumcised, aren't they? You know, Abraham's household was all circumcised. And if people are going to be in the house, either they're going to be a ger and they got to marry in and it'll take a few generations, or you want to have communion. You want to have yiskor. You want to have the Lord's communion. You want to eat the Passover lamb. You got to be circumcised. If you're a Gentile, you got to be circumcised if you want to eat communion. Now, Yeshua comes into Father's house, sets the thing up, and you're going to say, oh, you don't have to be circumcised, and you can eat communion. We're going to establish the Torah? The people that are strong in faith are the people who understand and believe God. And it's a different world. We're talking here about living in the kingdom of light, and we're talking about a time when form and substance are going to pass away, and we're talking about a time when he's going to roll up the scroll, and what's going to be left is you, like, naked in your identity, with no body, and you're still not going to pass through somebody else because you understand your identity and you're sanctified. He can't do that right now. We can't. We believe in Jesus. Take your clothes off. We can't do that right now. And what's going to happen when we're disembodied spirits? Oh, it's a lot more than just having your clothes off, son. So what's happening? That's where it's going. It's going to take how many thousand years? Maybe Messiah living on a planet 1,000 years to get the kind of changes you're talking about with the squirrels out there and not getting bitten and devoured by wolves. And we're going to have a lion laying down with a wolf. In Isaiah, that's the millennium. But how are we going to live that? Well, Messiah is going to be here. We're going to reign here for 1,000 years. Well, we're going to establish Torah. Well, glory will go out from Jerusalem to the ends of the world. But, you know, people aren't going to be accepting Torah necessarily right off. It took 2,000 years for Torah to be going away right now while the new covenant's coming in. And one's phasing in, the other's phasing out. And it still hasn't happened. And, you know, when he's going to take your clothes off one of these days. He's gonna disembody all form and substance one of these days.
Paul's not negating. But is Paul negating covenant, or is he establishing a new covenant for the Gentiles to key in on? Saying,
nothing new about okay, it. Noah, it was with Noah. Here.
No, he's establishing a
understanding of what the covenant is.
Right, he's establishing a principle. Is what's happening.
But there's got to be some binding factor there.
But the faith is the binding factor.
The saving faith of Abraham. Here's the ground for Gentile justification too.
On some kind of relationship.
The saving faith of Abraham.
Which is saying, I'm doing this and you're doing this.
Right.
Doesn't
this all go back to Romans 3:25, whom God has set forth to be a propitiation through faith in his blood, and because he shed his blood, justifying us. Now there's a point to learning Torah. Otherwise it would be to no avail.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. But see, he's not forcing. Right. But the thing I want to focus on here is this. Abraham's journey is coming out of Ur, going to the Promised Land. Now, the Gentiles are not all going to move to Israel and live there. Okay? They're going to go up there in pilgrimage, but they're going to be living in their nations. And when they're living in their nations, Paul has already said, it's okay for them to be uncircumcised.
Mm-hmm. But not uncircumcised in heart.
No. Well, that's fine. You know, you're playing now. Okay, but you're playing with the spiritual dynamic now. And I'm talking about in the flesh, Abraham, all his international household was circumcised in the flesh. Okay? Now, I think the people that marry in and that live in a Messianic Jewish house or want to live in the Lord's house or live in the temple or other things, if they're called to do those things, I think they're higher standards. Why? Because you're living in the presence of God. And he's always had higher standards. Higher standards of sanctification for people that are in his face than for people that are out there. The Jews who are out there, the priests, had a higher standard than the non-priests. When the non-priests left the house and went back off duty, standards could drop. Those guys could go out there and, you know, they could eat pork. And they did out in the end, on the edges of the camps. They did that. It's just that, oh, you want to go back on duty, you know, not a good idea. Well, what do you got to do? In Torah, now I'm not talking about where the tradition goes with it later, but in Torah, it's wash your hands, scrub your clothes, wait for sundown. And it's not a thing that went into a man that makes him unclean. You still got pork in your belly. It's 24 hours because the sun went down. Or, you know, you ate it at 2 o'clock and the sun went down.
Disobedience makes you unclean. Even as a disobedience, eating the fruit. It was a dietary law.
But unclean had to do with, it's the same kind of thing as having dirt on your hands. It's like there's a ritual for purification. And if you do the ritual, then you're covered. Just like when, right now, what do? See, we say, so follow the rules. And the house rules are, well, wash up, change your clothes, take a bath, wait for sundown, start over.
Don't eat knife with the blood in it. Don't
yeah, don't, well, that's worse. That's really worse. But, but yeah.
No,
I eating blood straight is different than, that's worse. Some things are more toxic. You know, adultery is more toxic. There's a lot of things that are more toxic.
But some that fruit was awfully toxic. And that was a dietary problem.
Which fruit?
The original fruit.
Oh, well, that was one rule. Well, that was one rule.
One of the simple laws to follow, and that's the whole illustration.
Well, he said in that day you die. But he doesn't say if you eat pork, you're going to die. He doesn't say that.
Well, no, he says that I give you everything that you eat.
Right.
Tapeworms in your brain.
There's Jew food and Gentile food. You can go to Burger King. All right, so the big picture is, without getting too sidetracked here, the big picture is, the Gentiles with saving faith, it's like they're picking up in Genesis 15:6 on believing God. And yet, Abraham, when he believed at that point, it was accounted to him as tzedakah. It was on his count as righteousness, righteous merit. And that is the basis that Paul is going to draw on in Romans when he's talking about saving faith. Now, the Gentiles, they're still going to go to the whole story of Abraham, which in Vayera we'll pick up where it is, but that's he's circumcised and getting Isaac back from the dead in order to say, we're going to come back after we worship. And he go up there and cut his throat to make an olah out of Yitzhak, and it's his kid. And he's going to come back, you know, he's got to be a true believer to go cut that guy's throat. But that's a lot later than when he's believing him for a son in the first place. And it's a heavier test. The Gentiles just have to believe God did that story, which requires a lot. But it's the same kind of saving faith. Was God good for it? Did he say he does the things that he did? He raised Jesus from the dead and he's going to raise you from the dead? I believe. There it is. You're an old guy. You're going to die. You're going to be put in a grave. And you believe you're going to be raised from the dead because of Yeshua? Yes. Then, you know, hallelujah.
Should the Gentiles get narrow cystic circosis that they can't even have faith as they pass? These things are universal.
Well, to believe it. But I'm saying the Jews don't necessarily believe it. The Gentiles don't necessarily believe it. But when you do believe it, the dynamic is saving faith, and that is what? That's what we're talking about here. So saving faith at the end, the saving faith of Abraham is the ground for Gentile justification too. And the way the whole thing is going to fit together here, you've got saving faith walks through unknown land. That's Abraham. He's going to be circumcised waiting. The definition is that he's going to be believing God for things not being, coming into being, and creating, it's creative might of God, creating things not being as being, and creating, quickening life from the dead, life making from the dead, that God can, has the power to do this, and the plan, the story, the plan to do this. And that when you believe that, so that that's where your heart and your story are written, then you have become a person who is making God's story your story. And that's salvation. That's being born again in the Son. And that's the beginning of light reigning in your kingdom. And it's no longer your kingdom now. It's taken over your kingdom. And the light is displacing the darkness. And you're becoming a new man. And you're being conformed, 2 Corinthians 3:18, from glory to glory into the everlasting image of the Son.
Jeff?
Yes.
Could you also apply what we were talking about, your story and God's story and everything, from a Gentile perspective? If a Gentile starts saying, well, I'm going to get circumcised for God or anything, then it's all about what you're doing for God, instead of taking God in faith that he lets you in on the grounds of what, the faith alone.
You know, the thing, I'm watching closely in our congregation, because it's like we have people, you know, of all ages right now who have questions on the circumcision. And, you know, the picture I'm painting right now is that Abraham starts out as a Gentile, do you understand? He's a Syrian. And he comes walking over. The guy's an Assyrian. Now, Israel's going to go back and assimilate and become Assyrians. There's this swap going on. Abraham comes here and we go there. And then he's trying to get us back out of there again. Now, if a Gentile is called, in my opinion, to enter the house, mm-hmm. you got to know it's coming from calling. Mm-hmm. When it comes from calling, then what will happen is...
What do you say enter the house? Are you talking about enter the house of faith of God, or are you talking about mm-hmm. service in the temple, like mm-hmm. the higher level calling?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, see, even the word higher level is kind of strange, because it is higher from the standpoint that it ascends and God's coming down, heaven is meeting earth. And there is a call to ascend at that level. That call, though, requires a higher level of discipline in your life. And you have to know whether you're called to that or not. It isn't better.
Very true.
It's more demanding. God, I think, is a live and let live guy, where he says, well, if you want to be in my house, you know, you got to play by the house rules. And if you don't, and you knowingly don't, he'll kill you. Nadav and Avihu. They were zealous. He'll kill you. So it's like, it's scary, and you gotta pay to play big time. Now, circumcision is the entering key for Abraham at the level of the nation that's from his loins. Okay? The Gentiles don't need that, because we're all going to join up when they take loins away from people. But I'm telling you, that's the other side of the millennium. I'm telling you, I think that's 1,000 years after Messiah rules, when heaven and earth are rolled up as a scroll. And in between, I wouldn't be at all surprised if there's another demonic hell on earth deal, and then you start watching seas of fire open up that you didn't see before. I think prior to that time, you've got 1,000 years when Messiah is ruling. And during that time, he gives everybody the chance that's around for the first resurrection. And the people around for the first resurrection, to me, are the people who were sold out in this life. They're the righteous that'll be raised, and God knows who they are. And they're going to be Jew and Gentile, one in Yeshua and one in Abraham. Because Abraham's going to be strutting around, in my opinion, meeting all his grandchildren for 1,000 years. And I think it might actually take him 1,000 years to meet everybody. And the guy is good for it. The guy was designed for it. Greatest gift of hospitality in the world. This guy, you know, circumcised on his third day, next we'll talk about, jumps up and feeds, you know, the fatted calf to a visitor. Nobody does that but Abraham. You feel terrible on that day. That's the worst day, day three. Now, if you want to be Abraham, then, you know, the ritual circumcision for adults, okay, it's a drop. They take it's a pin, they draw blood, but they don't strip the foreskin away, totally. And you know, you'd need, if we were doing it here in this congregation, it'd be with a rabbi and a doctor. And
a mole. Wow.
Yeah, it could be a mole, but for an adults, I think I... For adults, I think, you know... Oh,
it's a surgical procedure.
I was thinking of...
And older kids, you know, babies. Doctor and, you know, go that route because it's like... You know, and hospital maybe. Because, I mean, we don't...
Sorry.
You know, there's issues. But beyond that, and it's got to be based on calling, it's got to be based, in my opinion, on a whole lifestyle that goes with it. And then it's like you're saying that you want to be identified with that house. And it's saying, you know, you're hoping that you're not pushing too hard and that your kids will marry in and things like that will happen. And your kids' kids will marry in, things like that. And why? Out of a sense of calling. And where's the calling coming from? Those who we foreknew, we predestined, those he called, calling. It's got to come from calling. If it's not coming from calling, if it's not coming from God, it's a bad idea.
What about the idea of the covenant? I don't know if that's what he's getting at, but the idea of the covenant of when he was circumcised, Ab was circumcised, and then he went into Sarah.
The other one.
And then they conceived Isaac. Okay? In other words, Ishmael was conceived on an uncircumcised basis, and Isaac, it seems, was conceived on a circumcised basis. What of that?
Well,
in terms of covenant.
Well, Ishmael is not in the covenant because it says, you know, God was, he said he'll multiply him. You know, Abraham was his defense, and he said, would that Ishmael would be a great nation. He said he will be, but he's not the one that's chosen. The one that's chosen is going to be Isaac, and he's going to have a battle of nations in his womb, and the second born is going to come out just to show you it's got nothing to do with anything. In fact, the strongest kingmaker guy that busts out first is going to be Esau, and he isn't going to be chosen. So we're going to turn all this thing upside down, and the second is going to, you know, the first is going to serve the second.
But I mean, the covenant-making process, where the Lord says, listen, I circumcise your whole house, do this. Anyone that's not circumcised is not coming in
right.
A relationship with me at this point.
But again, it's got...
And then he goes into Sarah, and then so Isaac seems to be born of a circumcised...
And again, you know, somebody has to live in the land, and somebody has to live in the house when he sets up a kingdom. And he calls Israel because they're a stiff-necked people. It's like they're extremists. And he wants people that blow hot and cold. He doesn't want anybody that's lukewarm. Because mm-hmm. he wants the guys that are really completely zealous, sold out. Mm-hmm. That's what he wants. And that those are the house rules. And that's sort of the way it is. And it's a rough and tumble reality. And it's like, if you're not called to it, you're going to hate it. You're going to hate being in the culture. You're going to hate being in the whole reality. So what's going to happen over time is that heaven and earth are going to be filled with the knowledge and glory of God. He's going to transform the whole planet. What's going to happen over time is we're all going to be, you know, equalized, but that's going to be like after we lose our bodies. In between, somebody's going to have to keep a higher standard, I think, in heaven when it's on earth and when God is ruling here. And the higher standard may not be enjoyable. It may require more. And you got to want that. It's like Atlas, you know, has got the world on his shoulders, and if you're not a muscle builder, you're going to be tired all the time. You won't enjoy it. It's better to be standing on Atlas' shoulders in the park throwing the frisbee and looking at these guys that are sweating. You know, it's like live and let live is part of that whole reality. I think God creates us all different for his reasons. And in the end, he wants us to get over the idea that somebody's a second-class citizen. He wants us to get over that. Christianity, I think, has a very hard time with that idea because they think, oh, you know, if I'm not the first-class citizen because I'm not the genetic heir, you know, then I'm jealous. And that's the way Cain felt about Abel when his offering was accepted. And they've got to get over it. Everybody has to get over it. The Jews have to get over the idea that they got the whole thing wrong. That they murdered, you know, that they were the primary guy to kill Yeshua. That Paul had that destiny. He says, man, I'm the least of the apostles because I was killing him before I figured out what was going on. Well, in my zeal, I was, you know, applauding Stephen getting killed. I probably could have prevented it. Instead, I grabbed the guy, or I was in the crowd with, you know, everybody. I set the mood for killing this guy, and I nodded and agreed with it. And I feel that murder right on my brow. It's like I'm the least, because I got to dig out of that kind of hole. And I should have known better. I should never, under Judaism, I couldn't even murder, and I did, in my zeal. And it's like, you know, I can't be forgiven of this. I mean, he knows it. So he's telling you, you know, he's coming from a worm position. He's humbled on that. And he wants to make up for it the worst way. So he's running around with the missionary journeys and writing the letters and going everywhere. And he's on the sea and 40 days and lashes and crucified upside down or whatever. I mean, you know, because he's like, there's a lot of zeal that comes out of the moral drive when you think you got it wrong. There's a huge repentance that comes the other way.
So it's a lot of built up guilt there.
In part, yeah. That's a lot of power coming out of that. And grateful that he's alive at all and able to do this. And he doesn't care at that point what his station's going to be in life. He doesn't care. He just wants to, you know, he's happy to get in. And so he's got the right place. He's coming from the right place. And that's the lesson we all have to learn. Abraham, you know, he had nobody. He lived in Canaan with nobody. The guy had two grandchildren. He didn't have any great-grandchildren before he died. And this guy is going to be strutting around with a billion people in the millennium. God's going to turn everything upside down. But it's based on what you believe God for, and it's based on your obedience and your walk in radical faith. So the journey, the spiritual journey, he foreknew you. He predestined you. He called you. He justified you, and he will glorify you. And, like, relax in it. Don't worry about being a second-class citizen. Relax in it. Don't worry about getting nothing in this world. Relax in it. Don't worry about decreasing all the time. Abide in the light and, like, get a life. Get God's life. And get into the story. Get into his story. And then, you know, everything will work out perfectly for you. Perfectly. Because you'll fit. You'll fit into what God's calling you to. And when you fit, the fit will be perfect. And when the fit is perfect, you'll be perfect and complete, lacking in nothing. And if you can't believe God for that, then you got a problem. And if you're trying to do something about it, it's like you don't trust God that you're going to fit in his story. So what you got to do is you got to abide, you got to learn his story, you got to walk in saving faith, you got to realize that he's molding the universe and that he creates things out of nothing and he brings things back from death. When he creates things out of nothing, you see covenant kindness at work, and eventually the lion and the lamb will lay down together without biting and devouring. Because he's going to create out of nothing after you stop biting and devouring. You being in the image and glory of God, will radiate holiness to creation that will transform animals because you're doing it. It has to. It's under your oversight. It's going under your eyes, and you're not doing it, and you lead by examples, and you can't give what you don't have. But what you are is what creation will reflect. And Adam brought the fall, and we got bite and devour behavior, and darkness rules right now, but it's not going to be that way. And we got to start changing from inside. We get critical mass, Messiah comes, and we get light, and you're going to transform creation from the inside out. And when that happens, you'll watch the whole thing get to a point where everybody will know Torah. And when they know Torah, form and substance is going to pass away. Form and substance. You won't be taught Torah. You won't need to know Torah because you'll be the living word yourself, because you will be completely conformed to the image of Messiah. So that's where it's headed. And that's when you're walking in fullness of light and you're fully glorified. And you're going to get there. And it might be 1,000 years from now, but don't sweat the small stuff. And the small stuff includes who's going to have a front seat in the millennium. The small stuff includes who in this life is going to be rich. The small stuff includes everything that you think you're lacking. Because what you really got is the most important thing right now. You got Yeshua, and he's there always. And if you can't be happy just in his presence alone, it's like you don't have a prayer. And that's the starting point. And from that comes calling, justification, and glorification. So it's like, I'm back to saying, abide in the light, hurry on the Shabbat to abide in the light and sanctify your time with God. After that, understand that you rest, you radiate, you elevate. Understand that with calling, you'll have a desire to get closer to God. And as you do, you know, he'll be radiating you with his presence and changing you. And when he does that, what'll happen? You'll be on your way to not only being justified, but having sanctification take over. And as your sanctification takes over, you become more and more conformed to his image. You begin to know his story because you're living for his story. You got his categories, and he's alive in you, and you're decreasing. And then you start reading all the losses and things that are happening to you negatively in a different light. Abraham never missed not getting Sodom and Gomorrah for his cattle. He never missed it. Well, Lot definitely had the upper hand that day. He never missed it. and he didn't have the exile that went with it and everything else. It's like you begin to get on the inside. So, bottom line, walk the spiritual journey of saving faith. And remember, God can transform your situation because he can change nothing into things that are, and he can raise things from the dead. And when you're walking in the light, that will happen to you. That will happen more and more to you. And you'll experience the joy that comes from saving faith and the glorification that comes out of saving faith. And you'll experience it in this world and in the world to come. So that's today. And remember, Abraham had saving faith and he's waiting around circumcised. And he's not so unhappy that on day three, when we come back again, after all of us are circumcised, we'll get a visitation by the Holy One and the angels who come to destroy Sodom and Gomorrah. So come back next week, Vayera, and he appeared. Ironic benediction for the closing. Yivarechecha Adonai v'yishmerecha Ya'er Adonai panav alecha v'chuneka Yisro Adonai panav alecha v'yasim lecha. Shalom. The Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord make his face to shine upon you and be gracious unto you. The Lord turn his face to you and give you his peace. Shabbat shalom.
Shabbat shalom. I just realized I don't know what